It's always an exciting time of the year, especially for football, when you get ready to go to training camp. I don't know any other way to do this but to chase winning and to chase perfection, you know, each and every day. I think as you do that, you never know what you can hit on. This is football. There's no exact science to how this works. There's no magical way of predicting what the record's going to be. The guys in that locker room are going to determine how good we're going to be by how they work. I don't think it has anything to do with being young, old, in between, any of that. I think it has to do with our process, how we practice, how we go about understanding the opponent, all the things that I know that Paul's involved with and Sashi's involved with to get our football team to be the best that we can be. And if we do it better than 31 of the other teams in the National Football League, then we got something special happening. And that's all we're chasing, and that's all we're after.
You know, I just felt like we were all going out there working to get better, master the system, master the language of our system. And it's good, you know, being in the meetings thus far, you can see how much guys are recalling and how much more advanced we are on the field already at this point. All you can do is come out here and show the talents that God's blessed you with and continue to work hard every day. So I think everybody's coming out here knowing that nothing's guaranteed. You got to go out and you got to put in the work and show that you can be one of the 53 guys that can make this team. As a group, it's a great quarterback group. The room is awesome to be able to go in with those guys and study, learn the game, see how different guys see the game. And I think all of us take a little bit from each other.
Every year, you know, you're going to have some change just in terms of you know, your team. It's going to change somewhere in the neighborhood about 30%. Some of it's going to be easy transition. Some of it's going to be difficult. But our job is to overcome any tough situations that we may face. So, you know, right now I think we got a good, solid group of guys that have their focus on trying to get better each and every day and can't wait to get out there to begin that process. Very, very competitive situation. You know, obviously, you know about Marvin and Golden and within that crew. And, you know, you just talked about Anquan, but also T.J. Jones has done a great job, you know, during the course of the spring. We have to use what the time we've been allotted. You know, the league mandates that we utilize X number of days with so many hours in a day, et cetera, so much time on the field. And we're going to use every single minute of every single day that we're allotted to try to make certain that every position is going to improve. We're committed to that.
Trying to find a way to win games. In this league, if the quarterback plays well, your chances of winning are improved. You know, it's on me to play as good as I possibly can to try and help the team. And I think just command of this offense, you know, obviously we put it in kind of during the bye week last year, 3 days or 4 days of practice, whatever it was. And it has changed throughout this offseason. I had the ability to kind of tear it down and start again from scratch with Jim Bob and Callie and all those guys. So, you know, I think just the comfort level with what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What is going on? Welcome to the extravaganza right here on a Friday afternoon edition on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Outstanding day today. Why? Because that's the first time in a long time we've opened the show with a montage of NFL cuts, and that means training camps are underway too. Yeah! Loving every second of it. Ric Flair approves. Jim Harbaugh approves. Oh, you know what? We got to isolate Jim Harbaugh, who's got it better than us. We got to make that happen. It just now occurred to me that we hadn't yet done that, Jim Cushlin. We got to isolate Harbaugh for use in many, many, many future instances. But we start off the program with some NFL. Who wants a loan? If you're needing some money, let's go borrow some from Darius Slay. I think that might be your move. That might be the best place to go to get some cash right about now, as Darius Slay has been locked up multiple years, long-term contract, big-time dollars, $23 million guaranteed. Good deal for him, no question about it. Matthew Stafford might be next to hit a big, big payday. Justin Rogers says it's fourth in inches for Stafford. Will he surge across on a quarterback sneak and get a big payday? No question about it. It's going to happen. We're going to talk to Justin Rogers here in just a couple of minutes. And we got a lot of things to do today. How about the sporting news? You know, we talk a lot about NFL stories from specifically from ESPN, of course, being ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. But we look in other places, too. And one of the other places we find news today from the NFL side of things is from the Sporting News at sportingnews.com, as they have identified the 40 most hated NFL players of all time. Loudmouths, cheaters, and criminals. And guess what? A whole bunch of those cats are still playing today. I wonder how they feel. You know, these guys take this stuff very, very seriously. The NFL Network has been doing the top 100 players of 2016, you know, going into this 2016 season, as they've done for the last few years. And then they show, not only do they have, they count them down by 10 so they can drag it out and of course, you know, use it for ratings and to fill content, on NFL Network. But then they do reaction shows going to the players. How do you feel about being ranked number 22? How do you feel about the fact that somebody who you have a better quarterback rating than is ranked seven slots higher than you? How do you feel about this guy who is not as good a cover corner as you say, being ranked three spots above you? All that stuff. They try to kind of create that division and that sort of, you know, just that professional competitive nature that these guys have, wanting to be rated as better than their competition, you know, their colleagues at the same position. In fact, that's why the salary cap, or not the salary cap, I should say, but the salaries exploded so out of control. Used to be guys were, they would rate themselves and their greatness by number of Pro Bowls, or number of All-Pro teams made, or did I lead the league in sacks, did I lead the league in receptions, did I lead the league in picks. Now, and for the last 20 or 25 years, it's been a matter of, do I lead the league in my position at money? If I have more money than you, that means I am better than you. And that's how they do it. It's kind of how this happens. So they take real pride in their rankings in that regard. So I promise you that anybody who is a current player who is on this new list of the 40 most hated NFL players, and I've been watching and listening to some national stuff today as people are kind of reacting to this, if they find themselves on the list of 40 most hated players of all time, this is something they pay attention to. So guess what we're going to do? We're going to give them a reason to pay attention to it. We're going to see who belongs on that list, who isn't. We're going to see who doesn't belong on that list, who is, and kind of have a fun conversation about it. There are some of them that I think are going to be unanimous, including number one. So we'll get into that as we go this afternoon. So we have a lot of stuff to do. Obviously, we are now just essentially 3.5 days away from the baseball trading deadline. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that, probably in hour number two. But for now, it is all about the NFL as we start the program today. And if I heard Jim Cushlin whispering into my ear correctly, and Jim, you need to brush your teeth, brah. Salem, Salem, Salem. If I hear, where are those Newports? I don't know. If I heard him whisper correctly, he said to me that Justin Rogers of the Detroit News is ready to talk Lions camp opening and NFL as camps start all over the NFL. Justin, are you there, sir?
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't get in my introduction. Number 37 ranked beat writer NFL by the USA Today this week.
Now, it's the 37th ranked in terms of greatness or 37th most hated the way they did in the Sporting News?
I don't know, probably a little column A, a little column B.
I've been in both columns. In fact, I probably am in both columns, too.
Justin, that means you're doing your job right.
Hey, by the way, congratulations. You know, yesterday when Jim said, hey, we're going to talk to Justin tomorrow, actually, I think he told me on Wednesday when he caught up with you. You know, I said, Justin, I'm live. And he goes, no. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Justin is no longer I'm live. Justin is Detroit News employed now. So congrats on the new position.
Yeah, moving around, trying something different.
Yeah, absolutely. Good for you. It's a great thing. Happy that you are happy in your new spot. And I know you're going to provide the same great analysis and work. I've already been reading your work online anyway that you do everywhere you go. So it's good to have you, Justin. Thanks a lot. All right. First of all, did you borrow any money from Darius Slay yet?
No, I have not seen Darius Slay, but I hope to take out a small business loan later this evening.
Yeah, I would think that's a good place to go. $50.2 million for 4 years, $23 million guaranteed. He is developing into the shutdown corner that everybody wants, as you pointed out. Where is he on that? Not to say specifically third or seventh or whatever, but just in a general sense, how close is he to being one of those most elite shutdown corners in the league when you start naming guys like Sherman and Peterson and, you know, even though he's a little longer in the tooth, Revis Island and those kind of guys? Where is he on that scale?
Yeah, I think he's clearly in the second tier right now, and he's paid as such. But the nice thing about Slay is he's very young and he's an ascending talent. So, you know, I look at this contract in its entirety, and I think the Lions did well for themselves. It's market value. It might even be just a shade under market value because Slay still has a year left on his contract, and we all know that an extra year for that salary cap to go up is going to only cause salaries to go up that much more next year. He's currently going to be paid as the seventh highest cornerback in the NFL by average salary, and you know, he's under that tier of Sherman and Revis and Peterson, and that's where he should
be. Justin, where does that tier cut off? Is it those three and then the next group, or is there anybody else who belongs in that first tier?
I would put Josh Norman there, okay. And to a lesser extent, maybe the guys out in Denver, Tlaib and Harris, both of them are right there, which is why Denver is just so damn good between that and their front four.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, that's how they won the Super Bowl, obviously, with the offense being very limited with what Manning was able to do in the last game ever of his career. They certainly did, along with, like you pointed out, Von Miller. So around five or six guys, I guess six is what we would have named there, right? Sherman,
yeah.
And Peterson and Revis. Revis is still there, right? He hasn't slipped in the
second tier
yet?
Absolutely. No, okay. And then you look at that second tier with guys like Hayden, Slay, Janoris Jenkins, who just got a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, the off-field problems notwithstanding. I mean, in terms of just raw play, he fits in that group as well.
Do you have to be... Because, you know, so and we're off on a little bit of a tangent here, but this is kind of interesting since Slay just got this money. Do you have to be locked in on the other team's best receiver every play to be that? Because that was kind of the argument between a guy like Peterson and a guy like Sherman, you know, especially as they got their dueling paydays in the last couple of years. Peterson, you know, Sherman will quote stats about how many touchdowns Peterson gave up versus him. And Peterson always comes back and said, yeah, that's because you just play on one side. You don't lock down one guy no matter where he goes. You know, you're not asked to do the same one-on-one thing that I am every single play. You buy that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it obviously depends on scheme and what your coaches want. But, you know, if I'm going to sign a guy out in the open market or I'm going to draft a guy, I want the guy that can travel. You know, and Slay, for his first season and a half, he didn't travel a whole lot. He played one side of the field. He kind of came in as a bit of a raw athletic prospect, even though he played his last two seasons in the SEC. And I think they wanted to allow him to grow into the demands of the position as an NFL player, schematically, processing the information as it happens live. And if you only have to see it from one side of the field and you don't have to mirror it allows you to grow naturally. And last year when Rasheen Mathis went down, then they had Slay start traveling and following the best player. And he was very strong in the second half of the season. I think that's when you started realizing that, there was more talent there than maybe even realized, and it's why he is deserving of the deal he got.
You mentioned Hayden in that group of second-tier guys. For our Browns fan listeners, and there are a lot of them, is he still there? He missed almost all of last year. And to be quite honest with you, and Jim and I are both native Clevelanders, so we're both kind of Browns guys, Cushlin and I mean. Prior to his injury, Joe Hayden was getting beaten far too frequently in my mind. And I guess there's no shame in being torched by a guy like Antonio Brown, but multiple times in both times they played, in the Browns and the Steelers, Hayden's a gambler, and Hayden has been lit up a little bit. Is he still in that group, just for those who are Browns fans?
Well, I mean, first going back to, you know, the durability thing, you know, they say the greatest ability of an NFL player is availability. So, he's going to need to reestablish himself as a durable athlete. But the track record's long enough there that, you know, I think Hayden clearly still, belongs in that group. Again, he's going to have to reestablish that he can be relied upon from a durability standpoint. But, you know, the cornerback is probably the hardest position when you don't have a lot of support on the defense. If you don't have a defensive line giving you pass rush, and you got to cover an extra second. An extra second is an eternity for a cornerback. I don't care how good you are. You know, Richard Sherman is Richard Sherman because that Seattle defense is so good top to bottom. You go and you throw Richard Sherman on the Browns, he's not going to look as good. You throw Darrell Revis on the Browns, he's not going to look as good. You know, Revis didn't look that great in the Bucks with the Bucks the year he was there. He didn't look awful, but he didn't look like Revis Island, that's for sure. So, you know, it's still all complementary football. That's what makes great players great. You know, Slay benefited from Ndamukong Suh and Ezekiel Ansah 2 years ago. And last year they didn't have quite the dominant front, and still he continued to perform, maybe at a slightly lesser level, but that's where you could see the true talent when, you know, he's not relying on the entire defense as a whole.
We're talking to Justin Rogers of the Detroit News, breaking down a little NFL football on training camp opening day for most clubs around the National Football League. You're in Allen Park. Who's the next guy to get paid? And we already know because you wrote about this, too, and I teased it a little bit. This is one of those things that freaks me out. We're talking, of course, about Matthew Stafford. This is one of those things that freaks me out, Justin. as I noted in my open, which I don't know exactly when Jim got you on the line, how much you heard, but it used to be guys rated themselves, and I know I'm dating myself to 30 years ago, but back in the 80s and certainly in the 70s, you know, it was how many Pro Bowls you make, it was how many All-Pro teams you make, it was, you know, stats, you know, leading the league in your particular stat, how many times you do that, that rated the best players. And then, of course, in the last 25 or 30 years, it's become, no, it's whoever has the biggest contract is the best player. If you pay me the most, that means I am the best. And okay, I guess, until we find out that Matthew Stafford is about to be, probably, as you pointed out in your column or your article, is about to sign the richest contract in NFL history. And he is not the best quarterback in NFL history. He is not the best quarterback in the NFL today. He's not among the top five best quarterbacks in the NFL today. Yet this is where we sit. So let's talk about where we are with Stafford and what you think he is going to end up getting.
I think he's going to, if not he gets the highest contract, it's going to be pretty darn close just based on inflation and just kind of the natural progression of those things. You know, I don't think he's a guy that defines himself by how much he's paid. I think that's also part of the culture of the industry. You know, that's agents competing against each other. That's an obligation to the union to get as much as possible to set at the table for the next guy.
To be clear, I'm not saying he has said that. Like, I'm the right. best, I deserve the most. I just mean, like, again, you know, you go back and look at that Twitter war a year ago between Peterson and Sherman. After Peterson got his sure. and Sherman said something, you know, Peterson said, you know, you mad, bro, and back and forth about, see, I got more than you, I'm better than you. There's an ego thing there when you get to, you know, the biggest contract dollar compared to those of, you know, your competitors at the same position. So I know Matthew hasn't said this. I'm not trying to bag on him with this in any way. But that is just the mentality players have in a larger sense. You called it the culture of today, and it is. And in that culture, he's about to sign a deal that, quite frankly, he shouldn't sign. Well, he's going to sign, but I mean that shouldn't be offered to him based on that status.
You know, and I think we talked about this a few weeks back. You know, the difference to me is that if you factor in the natural inflation of the league, you know, what the salary cap has grown, $30 million in 3 years. I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but you're talking somewhere in the ballpark of 15 to 20%. So take those numbers, take whatever number Matthew Stafford's going to get, and then apply it to the guy that signed in 2013 and take 20% off. Now is he the highest paid player? No, it's just the way it works. You know, right. The money goes up every year. There's more money available, and the best player, often the quarterback, is going to get the largest percentage of a team's salary cap, and that's what's going to happen in this case. And then, you know, you're looking 2 years down the road, Ezekiel Ansah, he's going to pull the same thing. And not pull the same thing, it's just he's going to be eligible for the same thing because he is on that track to be one of, if not the best defensive end in football. And that's another position where you just get paid. And you're talking 15, 20 million a year for Ezekiel Ansah probably in a couple of years.
Yeah, and it's going to be more than what Von Miller got, and he's not Von Miller.
Probably.
And that is the problem. And the tough part about this for me is this is the NFL. I have a little bit of a harder time criticizing and complaining because of the non-guarantee factor. And you can be dumped, or they can ask you to renegotiate because they've got cap issues, or they got somebody else they want to bring on, or like I said, you get hurt, they can just dump you, and all you get was your guaranteed dollars. I get that, but it's still similar to the NBA in this regard. Mike Conley, the point guard of the Grizzlies, signed the richest contract in NBA history. He's probably the 40th best player in the NBA. He might be the 8th or 9th or 10th best point guard, and he's got a $150 million contract. That is all guaranteed.
He even played an All-Star game.
What's that?
I don't think Conley's even played an All-Star game, has he?
I don't think so. I don't think he's ever made an All-Star game. I mean, he's a good player. He's a good player. I mean, to be 40th best, and I just threw that number out there in the
NBA. Yeah, sure, let's go with that.
But that money is as the best. His is guaranteed. So I guess in the NFL, the one saving grace, if you will, and you can look at the agents and you can look at the players and say, I understand, is the fact that you do want to get as much as you can guaranteed, you know, as the overall value of the contract, meaning more guaranteed because the rest of it isn't guaranteed.
Right? No, I mean, I'm with you. You know, I think baseball is even more interesting because that's guaranteed, and the way the league is set up, the players are under control for so many years. So by the time they're actually hitting free agency, you know, they're often close to 30. Then they're signing these 7-year, 8-year deals for, you know, God knows how much, $20 million a year. And yeah, maybe they're worth it at the moment they sign, but
right.
Man, those last 3-4 years are just, they look brutal, and fans are angry at the general manager, but that's the culture baseball has created by allowing teams to control players' rights for so long and then forcing them to spend at the end. I mean, it's just, I don't know, every sport's got their own flaws. We've seen it in hockey. Hockey's got the same crazy 8-year deals for guys in their 30s. Yeah, hockey players play a little bit longer than, or at least more productive for a little bit longer than baseball players. But, you know, the Red Wings just got screwed on Pavel Datsyuk's deal because he walked away, and then they had a cap hit that they, you know, still had to eat because of the age he signed at. So every sport's got their yeah. flaws with their cap systems.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is it puts pressure on the player, you know, more than they probably deserve. I mean, you know, if Matthew Stafford ends up doing this, and you're probably right, he will. If he has a good season, he's going to get bigger than Andrew Luck's contract. But if he doesn't play better than Andrew Luck, he's going to hear it. And if you're not winning and if you're not going to the playoffs, it's going to be Mr., you know, record contract guy. It's just a little bit harder to justify that. And I don't know, you know, certainly they don't care when they're cashing their checks on Friday, but they certainly care when they're hearing it, you know, on talk radio and the newspapers or from the fans actually on Sunday. If you're not playing up to that contract, when you get into those types of stratospheres, it does add a little bit of, you know, pressure on the shoulders of the player, particularly if it's a quarterback.
Ah, well, if you're making $25 million a year, you can afford a soundproof room and somebody to edit your newspaper before you read it. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure they care, but they don't care.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is, but, you know, a lot of them do isolate themselves. You know, they don't have to pay anybody. They just don't pick them up. We're talking to Justin Rogers, Detroit News, covering the Lions up in Allen Park. Jim Cushlin is here along with Bob France on the Extravaganza. Cush, go ahead.
And what a fascinating conversation this is. But to circle it back to stuff going on with the Lions, who, like a lot of teams, opening camp today, but sort of sticking with it. You know, we're talking with Matthew Stafford and quarterback. And, well, in a twisted way, one way for him to, quote unquote, earn the possible highest paid salary for a quarterback that we were alluding to earlier is to make connections with his receivers. And the other day, so you had the Darius Slay news today, but a couple days ago, the way I worded this one, Justin, was a mini coup in the Lions being able to pick Anquan Boldin just days before training camp off the scrap heap on a nice money-wise friendly one-year deal to go with Golden Tate and Marvin Jones. So don't let them fool you. Matthew Stafford does have a few weapons on this line. Team, despite the fact that we're, of course, going to be entering year one post Megatron. Your thoughts on the Lions the other day bringing in veteran Anquan Boldin?
I've always loved Anquan Boldin. I mean, I think he's a fantastic player. I love the way he plays the game. I love his skill set. You know, and it's funny to think that he might end up being the fifth option on this offense in terms of the passing game. You're looking at Marvin Jones and Golden Tate, I think, are clear cut 1A, 1B receivers here. Theo Riddick, 80 receptions last year, you know, Stafford's safety blanket and probably the most, he'll be the most consistent weapon week in and week out with, you know, 5-6 receptions every week. Eric Ebron, the tight end, you know, he's going to be the clear cut number one tight end. He's continued to increase his production, particularly in the red zone his first 2 years. So then Boldin comes in as the slot guy and listen, he's going to be 36 in October, but that's Anquan Boldin. I mean, he still had in his 35-year season, 60-plus receptions, 68 or 69 leading the 49ers. He's still obviously very productive. The Lions have a lot of weapons. And I think people wringing their hands over the loss of Johnson, obviously it's a monstrous loss. You don't want to lose one of the greatest players in the NFL history at his position. You don't. But the Lions have enough weapons, talented, above-average weapons across the board, that I don't think they're going to have any problem producing in the passing game. It's going to boil down to the running game. It's going to boil down to offensive line protection as it has for years.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the running game because I agree with you. You know, the hard part about that is when you say it's kind of like a baseball conversation. When your best pitcher is your team's number one starter, does that make him a number one starter? You know what I mean? Does that mean he's an ace in the vernacular of, you know, of baseball? Is he one of the best pitchers in baseball just because he's your best? So when you say, you know, Marvin Jones and Golden Tate are 1A and 1B on this team, that doesn't necessarily equate to 1A and 1B in the NFL when you're talking about the Antonio Browns, Dez Bryants, you know, Odell Beckhams, et cetera, et cetera. Where are they in that vernacular?
No, I think they'd be two clear-cut high-end number twos or two low-end number ones. You know, I would probably put them in the conversation of somewhere from maybe the 15th best at the very high end. Maybe that's even a little high. I need to look at it, but 15th best to 40th best. You're talking two very good receivers. Listen, Golden Tate's averaged 94 receptions the last 2 years. He's one of the best after the catch in the NFL, and that's a special skill set to have. You know, Marvin Jones comes in here with statistics that are very similar to what Tate was producing in his last years in Seattle. You know, different situations. Obviously, Seattle was a running team, and Cincinnati had a number one option already, but I think that's a guy that can clearly produce 75, 80 receptions himself. So, Two talented guys. No, they're not Antonio Brown. They're not AJ Green. They're not Calvin Johnson. But you know they're talented, and I think you know the Lions will be fine with them as is.
What about the running game? They were flirting with the idea of bringing in Arian Foster before Foster never got out of Miami without signing a contract, so that didn't happen. Theo Riddick has got to be a bigger part of the running game. He's a great pass catcher, obviously, out of the backfield, but he's got to be more involved. What do you forecast there?
I don't expect that much out of Riddick, to be honest. I've kind of gotten over that. I didn't really ever see much of a great ball carrier, even when he was at Notre Dame coming out. Still haven't seen it. He's averaging about 3.2 yards per carry for his career in the NFL. He just doesn't have a lot of pop there. He's very good in the open field. It's why he's a great receiver, but they're going to have to lean a lot more on Amir Abdullah this year. And that, you know, leaning a lot more on him is between 15 to 18 carries. It's still not a whole lot, but it's a guy that averaged 4.7 yards per carry in the second half of last season, only fumbled once. An electric player, can run between the tackles better than people realize, especially those people that watched him in the Big Ten, saw him do it in Nebraska. And, you know, the power back competition is wide open. They've got several options. Zach Center, the undrafted rookie from a couple years ago that put three back-to-back-to-back 2,000-yard seasons up at a small school in college. You've got Stephen Ridley, who's coming off an ACL injury that it's 2 years removed now, so he should be closer to full strength. And, you know, that's really the two names I think that are going to compete for that spot the most.
Well, two things then on that. One on Abdullah with the shoulder. I mean, is he expected to have any ill effects from that, or is he going to come back 100% out of the surgery?
TBD. I mean, he's not on the PUP list. That's all we know. So
okay,
I guess we'll,
fair enough.
We'll wait and see and watch how it goes in the training camp.
The other part about Riddick has 118 career catches, I think, and 72 rushes. Clearly more out of the backfield. But Jim Bob Cooter said, I don't know, last month or something when he was asked about it, I'm sure you were there, said that he does expect Riddick to be a bigger factor in the run game. He said we got to iron it out or something like that, but he has to be a successful runner.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be predictable when a guy's on the field, and I think that's why you need two back sets and things of that nature just to kind of throw teams off. But even being a bigger factor in the run game, that's 4 or 5 carries per game. You know, it's just keeping teams honest. And until he proves he can do it, and he has not proved he can do it this stage in his career 3 years in, then it's not something I would be willing to rely upon.
Justin, you wrote about Justin Rogers, our guest from I almost said the wrong employer, from Detroit News. Justin Rogers from the Detroit. It'll take a little bit of time, just like when a player gets traded to another team. It's going to take a little bit of time sometimes. You also wrote about Coach Caldwell. What does he have to do? He doesn't take this for granted, that this is his job and he's safe as can be. He's got to have a good season. What is a good season to make sure that he is building and growing this team in the right direction, that he is most definitely back for another one after?
I think playoffs is the only way to guarantee it. You know, I think there are some contingencies where they miss the playoffs where maybe you give the excuse that he can come back for another season. But the only way to really lock in and be back for sure is to churn out another 10 wins. NFC North crown would absolutely guarantee another season. The schedule is favorable enough. The talent will not, causing anybody to stagger back is good enough to compete for a playoff spot. They're adequate enough. They have enough strengths and few enough deficiencies, pure deficiencies, that they compete for a playoff spot. So that's the expectation.
What's the likelihood of that? What's the likelihood of winning the division, let alone making the playoffs, let alone winning the division? You still have, I mean, I don't know what Jordy Nelson's situation is. He had a little setback there, I guess, as they get ready to open camp. But the Packers are still a lot of people are high in Minnesota too. A lot of people are really high on Minnesota and what they can do. Where do you rank them as we just kind of get into camp now?
I'd only put the Lions' chances about 10 to 15% in winning the division. I think Green Bay clearly walks into the favorite with maybe a 50% chance, and Minnesota's in there with a 25-30% chance. And you know, Chicago and Detroit, it's just a matter of how they adjust to their schemes. Chicago obviously still adjusting to John Fox, period. But you know, they have some talent over there as well. Not a lot of people are sleeping on that team, really. And in terms of playoffs, you know, I think the Lions' chances are a little higher, probably closer to 35-40%. I really
think
that's
still pretty cynical, man. Still pretty cynical. I mean, you're essentially saying you're going to be looking for a new coach next year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, only six teams make it each side. You know,
yeah,
so six of 16. You know, I'm not gonna be optimistic sunshine and rainbows when this was a 7-9 team last year and lost Calvin Johnson. Like, listen, I think 40% is a real accurate number, and you know, probably a lot of people would tell me that's still too optimistic, but That's how I see the team. I think they're a little bit better than people think. I think the schedule's a little bit better than people think. And, you know, that
better, you mean better, you mean the, better for them or better?
Better for them.
In terms of, okay, better for them than people think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, a quality schedule, and you never know how teams are going to work out, but they face some rookie quarterbacks and some rookie coaches, and, you know, they get Green Bay and Chicago early in the season when the temperature is more moderate. I think things line up favorably for them to have no excuses. Let's go with that.
Does it mean anything, Justin, that the first three of the first four are on the road? You did just mention Green Bay. You know, as I'm taking a look at the Lions' schedule, I know you mentioned Green Bay and Chicago. Yes, obviously, while it's still September, very early October, but nonetheless, those are road games. Lions start on the road at Indy. The one home game before October is Tennessee. Does it? And you're right. There are pockets in this schedule. You get the AFC South, so that means Tennessee. Seeing Jacksonville and those types of teams are on here. But does starting out, even if you get them in nicer weather, does starting three out of four on the road kind of play into, well, it's not really a good chance to make the playoffs in theory?
I mean, you're going to find a flaw in every schedule. It's not everybody doesn't get the one game, home away, or 2-2-2. There's going to be rough patches, and so happens the Lions is early, but I don't think it's Indianapolis, Chicago, and Green Bay aren't the most vaunting opponents on the road, particularly Chicago and Indianapolis. I think Indianapolis is a very similar team to the Lions. A lot of holes, a lot of talent. You know, could easily be a playoff team, could easily bust out. Chicago, you know, like I said, still adjusting. It's a very winnable game. Detroit's done very well on the road there in the last few years. And Green Bay has obviously dominated the Lions at Green Bay. But guess what? Lions are on a one-game winning streak in Green Bay, and that monkey's off their back. They now believe they can win there. They're going to go in there with confidence that they haven't had in previous years. So I think the Lions need to go 2-2 in that first stretch. They clearly had to beat Tennessee at home, and then they got to win, you know, at least one of those three other games. And I think Chicago's probably the most likely, but I wouldn't rule out a victory in Indianapolis.
I love the optimism there, my friend. That's a great one. They have a one-game winning streak there, and that's a good way to look at it. Justin,
well, when you have a 21-game losing streak, you got to hold on to what you can hold on to, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You take what you got. Justin Rogers, Detroit News, covering the Detroit Lions. Justin, really great to talk to you as camp opens up. I really look forward to having a great conversation with you as often as we can throughout camp and as we get into the NFL season. Thanks so much for the time today.
Yep, thanks. I'll see you guys later.
You got it. There you go. Justin Rogers getting us started with some NFL talk right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Other than that, it is a free-for-all Friday right here on The Ticket. That means anything you want to talk about is fair game. But I will warn you ahead of time, I am interested in discussing the 40 most hated players in the history of the National Football League. I wonder why they stopped with 40. I wonder, that's an interesting thing. The Sporting News, you know, sports magazine and now website, of course, has come up with their list of the 40 most hated players in the history of the National Football League. Many of them are current players, and you know they're going to react to this, no doubt about that. We're going to share with you some of the names on that list. Want to get your thoughts, who belongs on it, who shouldn't be on it, that is on it, and just see if you agree or disagree. This is one of those really interesting sports talk topics. Thanks to the Sporting News for throwing it our way. I've already got a lot of opinions I want to express on it, and we want to hear yours as well. So when you're ready, it's 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. You can also tweet to us at Sports Radio 106.5 on Twitter and Facebook your comments on this list, which we will put up for you at 106.5 The Ticket on Facebook as well. So let's get it going together on a Friday afternoon free-for-all on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
106.5. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
The Extravaganza, indeed, on a Friday afternoon. Why don't you be a part of it, huh? Talking a little NFL today. We've been so heavy on baseball talk for the last few days because of the trade deadline coming and because of the central race, of course, between the Indians and the Tigers. We spent a lot of time on that. I want, and a little bit of college football, too, of course, as the media days going on. Obviously, Mac Media Day, great program yesterday by Mark Beyer. And it was just, you know, there's a lot of current news for those things. But now that NFL camps are starting, we are getting into the NFL. And most importantly, because the Sporting News decided to go out there and list a hate festival or start a hate festival on former and current players, what they call, and this is just their deal, the 40 most hated players in NFL history, and that includes present day. That's what they put together, and it was subheadlined, Loudmouths, Cheaters, and Criminals. Who's the most hated player of all time? Just giving you a little rundown of their methodology here. That has become an intense and increasingly difficult question to answer in today's climate, because it's impossible to weigh the reasons not to like a guy. Sporting News, however, set out to name the top 40 and made one significant caveat to the list. Players like Aaron Hernandez, Ray Carruth, O.J. Simpson, and Ray Rice were left off the list. Why? Hernandez was convicted of first-degree murder. Carruth was found guilty of conspiracy to commit murder against his girlfriend and unborn child. O.J. Simpson's transgressions are well-known, but not until after his playing career was over, and Ray Rice, the incident effectively ended his career. So they decided there's no sense in debating those players' place on any hated list. They're going to be on it. But they decided to focus on players who were hated while they were on the field. And that's a great point.
Yes,
nobody,
it is.
Nobody hated O.J. Simpson when he was running for 2,003 yards in 1973.
Right.
Nobody hated... I'm sorry?
No. That's why I'm with you. I love that, because that O.J.'s the perfect example. He was never hated as a player.
He was beloved, in fact, as a player and as an actor.
And was well-liked by seemingly everybody until, well, you know the rest.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So they narrowed it down. So, you know, those other guys, again, were fine while they were playing, but other guys were hated while they were players, and that's what they focused on. And quite a few active players made the list. So with that, instead of reading you the entire list, which I will do eventually, because I want to talk about this for the next hour, into the next hour too, these are the current players. I find this just to be a little more interesting because, again, as I say, they're current players, and I promise you they're going to hear these things, and they're going to, you know, they're going to react to them. They react when they are rated as the, you know, where they fall in the top 100 players or why they didn't make the top 100 players when NFL Network does that every year in the offseason. They care about their, Jim, you know this, they care about their Madden rating. You know, what is my Madden rating?
Right.
Why was I only rated a 96 instead of a 100 or a 99 on speed or whatever?
Yes,
you know,
to piggyback on what you were saying earlier with Justin and whatnot, it's not necessarily the Pro Bowl appearances. Nowadays, it's what's my Madden rating and what's my dollar sign.
Yeah. It's kind of goofy in that regard. That's how they do things. So the guys who are current players, I want to go ahead and throw them at you just because it's a little more interesting. Number 40, the actual lowest guy on the list, as far as most hated. You know, this is rated from, well, worst to first isn't the way to say it. How do we say it? Worst is first. Number one is the most hated. Number 40 is the least hated above the most hated group, okay? Rob Gronkowski, Gronk, the ultimate frat boy. He drinks, he dances, he directs his own party boy cruises, and he gets away with all of it because who doesn't love Gronk? Well, everybody who isn't a Patriots fan who doesn't love the frat boy thing, that's who doesn't love Gronk. Gronk is hated because a lot of people feel like he gets by on a lot of double standards. That's Rob Gronkowski, number 36. And this guy absolutely belongs on this to me solely because of one game last year in the NFC East in the battle. He's got NFC East battles coming up now with his nemesis, Josh Norman. But it was last year in the playoffs when Odell Beckham Jr. and his head-hunting foray with Josh Norman, to me, he put him over the top for me. It's not so much the fans. Beckham's highlight reel catches are always worth second and third looks there, but it's his reputation within the league as a complainer and B, an instigator that is heated up after battles within the NFC East and the wrestling match with four, not wrestling, it was the headhunting. I'm quoting from Sporting News here. With former Panthers cornerback Josh Norman last season. Beckham is a hard competitor that occasionally goes over the top, but he is indeed hated for some of his antics. 33 on this list is Richard Sherman. Now, I'm going to tell you something about Richard Sherman. And these are all just my opinions. They don't make them right or wrong. That's the beauty of opinion-based talk shows like this one. You don't have to agree with me. If you disagree, light it up, 866-240-1065. I'm going to tell you something about Richard Sherman. I was relatively indifferent to Richard Sherman for the first few years of his career. He didn't strike me as being great or despised. You know, I didn't love him. I didn't hate him. He was just there. Didn't really like the Seattle Seahawks because I don't like their coach, Pete Carroll. And I kind of don't like their fans. I think they got an attitude, and I kind of don't like some of their attitudes of their players. Richard Sherman started to embody that attitude, particularly after his screaming festival at the Super Bowl and, you know, the WWE promo that we all remember, and it led to a great big discussion about, you know, low class in victory, that sort of thing. But he has, in the last year and a half, including last year's Super Bowl or last year's loss as they try to get back to the Super Bowl, Richard Sherman has grown on me in a very, very big way. He is obviously one of the most intelligent players in the NFL. Stanford educated, very deeply thoughtful and respectful when he wants to be, when he's talking about things that are serious. Is he over-the-top cocky, self-promoting? Yup. But I will take that as long as it comes with the humility and the respect that he shows in matters of social significance. What I mean by that is, while there are individuals in the sports world right now all going on and joining what is essentially a false narrative about police officers and how they work in the American public, particularly when it comes to minority suspects or minority arrestees, and they're all screaming about minorities being mistreated by police officers, Richard Sherman has stepped up in the face of all of those people and said, bullcrap. It's kind of very similar to what Charles Barkley has said. Bullcrap. This is, a lot of this is self-brought on. And we cannot isolate ourselves away from rest of society by saying Black Lives Matter, because all lives matter, including those officers' lives who were being ambushed and murdered, like the most recent one in San Diego just last night, in the name of this cause. He said, yes, every life matters. Brown lives matter, Black lives matter, but every life matters. He is a very deeply thoughtful, introspective guy. And he has come off of my top 40 hated. I never really had one, but you get my point. He would not be on this list for me because he has really, really grown and shown so much more than he did when he really kind of burst onto the scene with that post-Super Bowl screaming match in 2014. He has grown so much, not screaming match, but that screaming promo. So to me, Richard Sherman doesn't belong on that list, but there he is. Number 28 is definitely on this, and I can't believe he's only at number 28. He's got to be in my top 10. Vontaze Burfict of the Bengals, the thing that he did last year to Antonio Brown, the celebrating of Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he's most hated in Pittsburgh. No, make no mistake about that. But that personal foul for that head-hunting shot on Antonio Brown, which caused Brown to miss the AFC Championship game and a possibility of going to the Super Bowl with the Steelers. Vontaze Burfict is just about the emblem, the poster child of everything wrong. Everything wrong. In the National Football League today. He doesn't belong in the league. He absolutely does not respect his opponents. He does not respect the code of brotherhood in this league. He's willing to take somebody's career into his own crown of his helmet like that. Vontaze Burfict, to me, is a straight-up punk. He belongs on this list and higher. The next name, and by the way, Kush, if you've got thoughts on any of these guys when I'm done, jump in. The next name on this list of active players who made the top 40 most hated NFL players of all time, according to the Sporting News, is a shocker to me. And it's Cam Newton. Cam Newton is number 20. They're saying that Cam Newton is more hated than Vontaze Burfict and Odell Beckham Jr.?
It's amazing what one pouty post-Super Bowl press conference will do.
Well, you know, I guess that's where it comes from, right? Because
I can't think of any other reason, honestly.
No. I mean, some people say he's too cocky. But again, look. I've criticized Cam Newton in the past for the Superman routine, for the dabbing and bobbing and this and that, and only because he's a quarterback. That's all. Because when you see wide receivers do that sort of thing or running backs, it's just like whatever. You know, it's kind of what they do. Quarterbacks have typically been more buttoned down. Quarterbacks, especially who are MVPs, some one of the best players in the game. Generally speaking, quarterbacks like that are more buttoned down. They just don't do those antics in the stands. But it never made me hate him. It just made me like, come on, bro. But then, of course, after his dances and his kind of, you know, rubbing a little salt into his opponent's wounds, then he undid that damage by what? Running over to the stands and handing footballs to kids. Who can hate footballs for kids? So I never hated Cam Newton. But then came the press conference after the Super Bowl. Like you said, Jim, pouty, spoiled, babyish, entitled. He was so expecting to win that Super Bowl, he had no idea how to handle losing. And the way he handled losing was the worst possible way to handle losing. And I got to tell you, he became one of my least favorite players at that moment. But now that some months have passed since February, early February when that happened, I'm going to go back and look at the whole body of work. He celebrates too much in my mind, every first down run, every touchdown, a little bit too over the top. But that just makes him cocky. It doesn't make him hated. And the post Super Bowl thing, to me, made him hated for a short while. But I'm over that. He's the NFL's reigning MVP. He is a superstar of the highest order, and he is a guy who makes little kids happy when he scores. How the hell is Cam Newton on this list, especially up at number 20, ahead of other guys like, just to throw them out there for you, ahead of other guys like Vontaze Burfict, ahead of guys like Courtland Finnegan, ahead of guys higher ranked under terms of hatred, of guys like who else can we throw up there? Who was really punky, and I'm looking at some of the more modern guys. Oh, Jack Tatum. Jack Tatum was despised for being a headhunter and a cheap shot artist in his years as an all-pro safety.
Here's a name
He's
for
number
you.
Number 26 yeah, on that list.
Here's another name for you on what you're trying to say that are somehow more hated for than or less hated, I should say, than Cam Newton, but not sticking with old Browns fans. Remember this guy from 1986, Mark Gastineau. Remember him?
Oh, yeah, the sack dance kid. Yeah. Yeah, he's the one who introduced the sack dance to the NFL, really, to NFL vernacular, doing that whole goofy thing that he would do. Again, over-the-top celebratory. It did make him hated. But, the weird thing is, he spawned something that kind of became well-accepted, after that. You know, Neil Smith's home runs after every sack, teeing it up and watching it go. I mean, there have been a lot of post-sack routines that were kind of based on or developed by the Mark Gastineau thing. So if he's hated, I don't know how much he's hated by other guys, other teams, because a lot of other guys built their own little post-sack routines, if you want to call it that, off of Gastineau.
His name, when I looked through the list, just popped out at me because any Browns fan will remember that double overtime game against the Jets in 86 and his mess up at the end that helped keep that alive from a Browns perspective anyway.
Yeah, and then there's that personal thing. And you've, like I said, when you're talking about Burfict, that's going to be a personal thing with the Steelers. There's going to be but we're talking, of course, and so is the Sporting News, overall hated by everybody in a broader sense. So that's we got to get to our break here at the top. So let me just finish doing this in list order of the active players. Number 17 is Richie Incognito. You probably remember why. Number 16 is...
Can we call him active anymore?
Well, do they count him as a current player because he's still technically eligible to play, even though he's not on the roster. Yeah. But Johnny Manziel is the 16th most hated player in history. Number 15, James Harrison, still doing it in his late 30s for the Pittsburgh Steelers, the former Defensive Player of the Year. Number 12, Jay Cutler, Mr. He has never smiled once in his entire professional life. Number 10, Adrian Peterson, because of the child abuse story from a year ago. Number 9, Adam Pac-Man Jones, for just too many reasons to even begin to describe. Number 8, Ben Roethlisberger, although he seems to have been born again after getting married and settling his life down, his early younger party frat boy lifestyle in which he faced multiple sexual assault allegations. None of them ever charged, but allegations anyway. He's number 8. Number 5 is Tom Brady. What? And why? That one is straight up jealousy. Make no bones about that. And then number 3, the highest ranking active player on the list, is former Lion Ndamukong Suh. They did not include Greg Hardy, which is at number 4 because he's not on a roster. Then again, we did that with Manziel, so I guess I could have. But Greg Hardy is number 4. And the number 1, again, he's not on a roster. His career is probably over. I cannot imagine anybody signing him. But he's on this list at number 1, the most hated player in the history of the National Football League, is Michael Vick. I didn't include him on the list of active players, but he's on the actual list of most hated players, Michael Vick, for reasons that should be obvious to pretty much everybody. All right, so there you have some of the active players. We'll get into the rest of it, and I want your calls on it. Who belongs on this list that isn't, and who is on this list that should not be? That's what I want to hear from you as we continue into hour number 2 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It's always an exciting time of the year, especially for football, when you get ready to go to training camp. I don't know any other way to do this but to chase winning and to chase perfection, each and every day. I think as you do that, you never know what you can hit on. This is football. There's no exact science to how this works. There's no magical way of predicting what the record's going to be. The guys in that locker room are going to determine how good we're going to be by how they work. I don't think it has anything to do with being young, old, in between, any of that. I think it has to do with our process, how we practice, how we go about understanding the opponent, all the things that I know that Paul's involved with and Sashi's involved with to get our football team to be the best that we can be. And if we do it better than 31 of the other teams in the National Football League, then we got something special happening. And that's all we're chasing, and that's all we're after.
You know, just felt like we were all going out there working to get better, master the system, master the language of our system. And it's good, you know, being in the meetings thus far, you can see how much guys are recalling and how much more advanced we are on the field. Already at this point, all you can do is come out here and show the talents that God's blessed you with and continue to work hard every day. So I think everybody's coming out here knowing that nothing's guaranteed. You got to go out and you got to put in the work and show that you can be one of the 53 guys that can make this team. As a group, it's a great quarterback group. The room is awesome to be able to go in with those guys and study, learn the game, see how different guys see the game. I think all of us take a little bit from each other.
Every year, you know, obviously you have going to have some change just in terms of your team. It's going to change somewhere in the neighborhood about 30%. Some of it's going to be easy transition. Some of it's going to be difficult. But our job is to overcome any tough situations that we may face. So, you know, right now I think we got a good, solid group of guys that have their focus on trying to get better each and every day, and can't wait to get out there to begin that process. Very, very competitive situation. You know, obviously you know about Marvin and Golden and within that crew, and you know, you just talked about Anquan, but also T.J. Jones has done a great job, you know, during the course of the spring. We have to use what the time we've been allotted. You know, the league mandates that we utilize X number of days, at least so many hours in a day, et cetera, so much time on the field. And we're going to use every single minute of every single day that we're allotted to try to make certain that every position is going to improve. We're committed to that.
Trying to find a way to win games. In this league, if the quarterback plays well, your chances of winning are improved. You know, it's on me to play as good as I possibly can to try and help the team. You know, I think just command of this offense. You know, obviously we put it in kind of during the bye week last year, 3 days or 4 days of practice, whatever it was. And it has changed throughout this offseason. I had the ability to kind of tear it down and start again from scratch with Jim Bob and Callie and all those guys. So, you know, I think just the comfort level with what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling are we right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hope you're having a great afternoon. It's a free-for-all Friday right here on The Ticket. That means anything that you want to talk about is fair game for all of us, although we are kind of locked in on some NFL stuff right now because of the the fact that camp's open today. Yeah. You just heard a lot of cuts.
Happy
there.
Happy training camp day.
Training camps are open. Hugh Jackson, you heard from RG3. You heard from Jim Caldwell. You heard from Matthew Stafford. Anybody else in there that I missed?
No, that was it, that one.
Good montage there. By the way, you know what else we should hear from just briefly before I get back into the hated list? This guy, if this list would have come out 2 weeks ago, might have been on it. And I'm talking about Browns running back Isaiah Crowell for his incredibly, indescribably, incomprehensibly, unimaginably disgusting Instagram tweet that he made, or Instagram post, I should say, that he made after a bunch of Dallas cops were shot and killed. He posted a picture, a drawing, a cartoon, as you know by now, of a police officer being beheaded by a man dressed in all black but adorned with USA colors, as if this is America cutting the heads off of cops because they don't like the way cops are policing. It was just unbelievable. We all know what happened. There were loud cries for him to be cut from the team. I was one making those cries. He was not cut from the team. He promised $35,000, or roughly one game check, to the Dallas Police Officers Fallen Officer Fund. Or memorial fund. He went down to the funeral of one of the officers as an invited guest of an FOP member down there. He's doing everything he can to make amends. Well, now is his first exposure to fans since all of that went down. Is he ready? How will he handle it? How are the Browns handling it? Because it is still a very, very desperate. Maybe desperate's the wrong word. It is a very, very dicey PR situation for them when it comes to Isaiah Crowell. So they break camp today, or they start camp today, with Isaiah Crowell kind of in the crosshairs. Sashi Brown, what do you say? One more time. Sashi Brown, what do you say?
Yeah, I think it starts with obviously grave disappointment in the action in the first place. We don't skip past that. You know, Crow, to his credit, called both you and I on his own to be accountable. He had wanted to make steps. Obviously, it was a huge mistake for him. We will have some discussions internally and handle it internally, but he has taken the steps that I think, at least at the outset, that he should, rightfully so, to make something that was very wrong into a right. And we'll use that as a teaching lesson for the entire team.
That was
something that Hugh preaches. It was disappointing, but hopefully from some of this, some good can come.
Well, that was the first public statement today on the day of opening training camp out in Berea for the Browns from Sashi Brown, Executive Vice President. What about head coach Hugh Jackson?
It was very disappointing, but at the same time, we don't feel that that's Crow's character. I truly believe that he will continue to work at making this right.
Now, the other guy with all kinds of reputation and image problems out there at Browns camp, and we're going to try to talk Monday with Scott Petrak. We couldn't reach Scott today to get a little preview of Browns camp the way we did with Justin Rogers of the Detroit News about Lions camp in the first hour. But the other guy, of course, is newly reinstated, technically kind of, sort of, wide receiver Josh Gordon, because Gordon has been reinstated effective week 5. He still has to serve a 4-game suspension coming on the heels of his indefinite ban. So the ban is lifted, but the suspension remains. And so he gets to participate in camp, practice, preseason games, and everything else. The actual suspension then won't kick in until the start of the regular season over the first 4 weeks. Sashi Brown, again, Executive Vice President, what are you thinking about Josh Gordon as he comes in?
Well, he's excited to be back. We are glad to have him back. You know, it's a long time for a player who's on your roster to be away from the team. So just getting back into the structure and with his teammates in the building, I think it will be a very healthy thing for him. And if the message from Josh and the pledge from Josh wasn't consistent with what we wanted to see from him, we would have made a different decision. That wasn't the case. He's in earnest, wants to make the most of this opportunity, and he knows his situation. Going to get around him and give him that opportunity.
He says he's a changed man, by the way. He said, and that's his statement to the media today and going into today. He said he's a changed man. He has learned so much more than he ever imagined he could over this whole thing. He said he is going to make everybody proud of him. He said he is getting help from people who know him best and who love him best, including his very good friend and former Baylor teammate, for a minute or two anyway, Robert Griffin III, the quarterback. Josh Gordon said that Griff, is his locker is next to him, RG3's locker is next to his, and he said he has always looked up to Robert Griffin. It's why he wanted to go to Baylor in the first place, and that he is going to continue to pick the brain of Robert Griffin, among other guys that he trusts, to help support him in his recovery from his addiction issues and everything else that he has gotten himself into. Is that enough for Hugh Jackson? Here's the Browns head coach on Josh Gordon and his return.
He's going to have to be accountable to what it is that he needs to do, first and foremost. And we understand that the league have expectations for him, and we do too. And we shared those with him. And I truly believe that he wants to make it right as well.
So he talked to the media a little bit and said he is a different person than he was when he went away in the substance abuse program, and of course when he received that indefinite ban.
I definitely think I'm a different person. If you haven't changed over a period of time, it's definitely a bad thing. I think me standing here is a testament to that. You know, most people might not see it that way. You know, that's just comes to the territory of me being who I am, considering my past. But my mother, like I said, looking towards the future, and hopefully people can see that through what I do here in the community as well as in football field.
And that's a big part of this, by the way, what he said, and it is a sign. I remain very, very pessimistic, not because I am a pessimistic person, but I remain pessimistic about Josh Gordon solely because of the number of incidents. This isn't a one-time thing or a two-time thing or a three-time thing. This is a half a dozen or more time thing going back to his days in college at Baylor. So Josh Gordon has kind of burned up most of the benefit of the doubt, if you will. He's kind of used up the benefit of the doubt that guys get. But when you have this many offenses, it's just, you know, it's don't tell me anymore, just show me. Don't sing it, just bring it. That's the way it is with Josh Gordon. So I'm a little pessimistic, but I do like the fact that he said, I understand people don't believe me because of my past, because of all of the stuff that I've done, and I understand that, and I'm going to have it comes with the territory. So that's a sign of maturity, if nothing else, is that he recognizes that you know, people are not going to trust him, and they're not going to, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt because he really hasn't earned that. In fact, he more than didn't earn it. He kind of earned the opposite. He earned people's distrust or mistrust rather than the benefit of the doubt.
To take people inside that relationship, but that's one of my good friends. I'm always going to be there to support him. You know, and that's what I'm trying to do, and that's what he wants to do for me. You know, we're definitely two different people headed down two different paths. We'll all reach our outcome at a different point in time. But that's my friend, first and foremost. But for the sake of my career, I have to do what I have to do. And for him, going through what he has to go through to get where he needs to be, that's on him.
That's Josh Gordon, I believe, talking a little bit about Johnny Manziel, and he has been good friends. And Johnny Manziel, of course, is facing his own problems, obviously, in trying to work his way back into the league. So he says he's a different guy. And I can tell you this, Jim Cushlin, if Josh Gordon fumbles again, and when I say fumbles, I don't mean the football, I mean his opportunity. If he fumbles and gets another positive test or violates the program in any such way and earns himself yet another suspension, whether it be another year-long one or a lifetime ban, he's going to find himself very, very quickly on that list of most hated players ever.
Not just on the list of hated players if he fails again. For me, because, and he's right to say it, we're right to end up throwing it out there like this, that no, we don't necessarily believe you. You have to show us. So for me, if he does it again, I'm going to start keeping track of a clock and figuring out how many hours it takes for the Browns to cut him then at that point. Seriously, because if he does it again, don't they have to cut him immediately?
You know, I would have thought already that would have been the case. So I don't know that I would put my watch on it and say I'm looking and counting down the hours, because I would have thought that decision would have been made already. When you go from being suspended for a few games to being suspended for 10 games to being now banned from the NFL permanently, or at least until such time as the commissioner decides to end that ban. And people, I talk about this all the time, and some people don't understand it. It is extraordinarily important to know the difference between a ban and a suspension.
Yes, what Josh Gordon had was not a suspension. That announcement earlier this week was Roger Goodell formally saying, yes, you are reinstated in the league.
Which is different than a suspension
exactly.
Coming to an end. A suspension, for those who don't know the difference, a suspension has a beginning and an end. He is now suspended for 4 games. It's got a beginning date and an end date. The end date is after the Browns' 4th game of the regular season. His suspension is over, and he's automatically back. What he was under was a ban. You are not allowed to play in the National Football League anymore. You don't have a job anymore. You're banned. You still belong. Your rights will still belong to the last team you were on before this ban. And if you can show sufficient progress in addressing the issues that have led to your ban, then you can apply for reinstatement to our league.
Right.
You can apply for it to have your job back. And we will consider reinstating you under our terms. But there is no guarantee. If you are suspended, you have a guaranteed end date. It is a temporary event. You are suspended from this point to that point. From point A to point B, then you're back in, no questions asked. Your suspension has been completed. He did not have a suspension this time. He had a ban from the league. He had to apply for reinstatement, and he did so. And he did so last year as well, and he failed, and he did not get back in, or is actually right after the end of the season. He applied again, obviously, this summer, and Roger Goodell has gone ahead and rolled the dice and said, okay, I'll let you back into to our league. I'll let you back in. You got to go back to the team that you came from, and you're going to have to make things right with them, and you're going to have to serve a 4-game suspension when you come back. Now, this one does have an end date, and then we'll see where it goes from there. So, Jim, I would have thought when he got a full ban that they would have dumped him and said, that's it. We're done. We can't continue to play this game with him. We can't continue to try to figure out whether he's going to be a part of our team or not. If he is reinstated, we don't know if he's going to be with us
right.
For 2 games or for 12 or for 16 because of his his propensity for screwing it up over and over again. I might have almost been in the position. In fact, I was on the air here saying that cutting him, releasing him, waiving him, whatever you want to call it, would have been addition by subtraction. Just get this distraction away. Even if he's got Hall of Fame caliber talent, if it isn't there and you don't know it's going to be there, it could be more harm than it does good.
And based on, saying that way, because I'll agree, I'm still a little bit surprised that many months ago when this was all happening that he wasn't cut from the Browns basically right then and there. But given the fact that he's not, I therefore have to believe after all of this, including the banishment, and maybe I'm just being naive on this one or something, but I have to believe if another incident comes up, which he's got the track record, that they have to finally pull that trigger this time. I got to think that. Otherwise, then I have no idea what to think of the front office.
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's the front office. It's this front office. It is a different front office than the – see, you and I – and all fans, Browns fans in particular, have been here through all of it. They have seen every one of the suspensions, every one of the drug violations, every one of the failed tests, every one of the, you know, the ban, and all of this stuff. So for us, it's like, man, this is just too much. Dump him, get rid of him, because we've been here through all of it. But guess what? Hugh Jackson hasn't been. Sashi Brown hasn't been. Paul D. Podesta hasn't been. For them, hey, man, this is strike one with us, not strike seven. And so they're going to be a little bit more inclined to be patient and say, let's see if we can help him work through this. Maybe the other administrations didn't have the right approach with him on how to help him stay eligible and how to stay healthy, how to stay clean, how to stay out of the drug program. Maybe they didn't know how, but let's give it a shot here. Maybe we know how. And if he has one more stumble here under them, with them, it's only going to be, you know, essentially their second. Well, you could argue it's his first strike, because his first banishment, or I'm sorry, failed attempt to lift the ban, kind of came as this administration was just getting in. But now that they're here, if he has a stumble slash fumble, it would be the first that they've had to actually deal with. And I don't know that they would be so quick to say goodbye, because the only other person who's been here for all of it, Jim, other than the fans, is Jimmy Haslam. And if Haslam is calling the shots and finally saying, okay, I've had enough of this guy, I've seen this going on for 5 years now, okay. But if Haslam is going to let his front office be the decision makers, then maybe not. Maybe they're going to be inclined to say, hey, we haven't had our crack with this guy yet. Let us try to figure it out.
And maybe that's what's going on. Maybe that very well is what's going on. And but all of this whole thing we're talking about right now, though, stems from the fact that, no, he's had so many strikes so far, he has to walk the walk on this one.
I want to play one more clip here, and then I want to go to the phones, because we got some people on hold to talk about that most hated list. Going back to the other Browns, what do you want to call them? Interesting character or subplot as they start training camp out in Berea today. Josh Gordon's return from the banned list, and Isaiah Crowell from being public enemy number one in terms of most despised. Here's Isaiah Crowell today talking a little bit with the media about his return or his opening of camp after the very, very controversial Instagram post.
Any way to explain what you were feeling at that moment?
Really just emotions running and, you know, just in my feelings about, you know, just what was going on. But, you know, I made a mistake of posting that picture, and I wish I could take it back, and that's not who I am. And I'm just trying to, you know, get everybody to see that that's not who I am. And, you know, I made a mistake by posting the picture, and I'm sorry for it.
I want to, I really, 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 really want to believe, I really do, that he's right when he says that's not who I am. I really do. I just don't know if I do. And the reason why is it's called cynicism, because I've seen far too many of these kinds of things where somebody lets their real character show through when they do something like this, but when they realize how much money it's going to cost them, when they realize the professional hit that they're going to take, when they realize that their bosses are like, dude, you have got to be kidding me. You know, how are we going to ever sell you back to these fans and put you in the lineup when they hate you and they're booing you and you're going to have to make this right? And then out come the apologies and the effort to do this and do that. Is it legit? Is it real? Is it sincere? I don't know. I want to believe it. I want to believe it because I think if it is true, he could go a long way toward maybe actually helping heal some of the divide between people in minority communities who don't trust cops and cops, because cops certainly don't trust him anymore after something like this. I think that he could be in a real unique position to help in that regard if his sincerity is legitimate and not just financially driven, because he knows his career is on the line if this doesn't get fixed. So just to throw that out there, there's a little bit from Crowell today reporting to camp out there in Berea, Ohio. All right, Stevan is in Toledo. Stevan wants to get in on the most hated list that we started to run down from the Sporting News. They have listed the 40 most hated players in National Football League history. Number one on that list, if you're wondering, was Michael Vick. And Stevan, go right ahead, sir. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good,
First of all, I'm kind of surprised. I'm kind of surprised that you
mention earlier that Tom Brady was number five. That is no surprise to anybody I know.
Why?
Because I'm going to tell you this, it's not jealousy either, because I think the best quarterback stands right now, that still stands, is Joe Montana. He wasn't hated, and I was not a 49er fan. But I would respect him as probably one of the greatest quarterbacks in history, better than Tom Brady, mainly because he played at a time where defenses were a little bit more stout, and he took 90% of his snaps under center.
Make sure we're talking about the same thing here, my friend, because you're talking about Joe Montana being better because of this, that, and the other thing, and I'm not talking about who the better player was.
Maybe I'm not making my point.
Okay.
I'm talking about the list. I'm talking about the 40 most hated. The reason I said all that is because a lot of people feel that Tom Brady, the game has been handicapped for him. You know, so because of his success is why the game was changed. That's what I was getting at.
You're still not doing it for me. Explain what you mean by handicapped. How was the game handicapped for him?
There's been rule changes.
So we're talking the Tuck rule here is what we're talking.
No, we're not talking about the Tuck rule. Well, that was one of it. Tom Brady has been the beneficiary of most of the rule changes that has occurred to protect the quarterback
in his career. Hold on. In what way? How is Tom Brady
Stavin, hold on. I want to get to the list because I don't want to. We can debate this.
No, but we can get to the list. I'm going to give you more time. I'm going to give you more time, but I want to get to where you're going with this, because what I want to know is that clearly a lot of the new rules favor offense, favor the quarterback, favor receivers, no touching beyond 5 yards, and all of the stuff that has been put in, quarterback protections, et cetera, et cetera. How does it benefit Tom Brady more than it does any of the other NFL quarterbacks that have played during his era?
It benefits him because most of the time when a rule change occurs, it's because something that happened to Tom Brady. When Tom Brady got hurt, he went down for a whole season. There was a rule that went in, you can't dive at a quarterback receiver's knees. That came into play. That happened, going on for years, and then all of a sudden, until Tom Brady got hurt.
Stavin, why would that make Tom Brady the fifth most hated player in the history of the league because a rule was put in to protect a quarterback? Why would that make him hated? I don't get that.
Why would it make him? You don't see, no, not because of rule. Every rule that has been put in, most of the rules that have been put in since he's been playing is because of Tom Brady.
But every quarterback, any rule that is put in to help a quarterback helps every quarterback, and none of them have done the great things that he has done, other than Manning,
none of these other quarterbacks needed these rule changes. None of them. They didn't need it. What makes you think Tom Brady needed it?
Tom Brady has succeeded before and after any rule change that has ever happened in the NFL. Hold on, you're making my point for me. Stavin, hold on. Let me make one more thought on this. Hold on, and then we'll get to the rest of the list.
You're wrong, because the first championship he ever won was because of a rule change. The Tuck rule.
Yes, I agree. But you know what? Why would the league not be the one hated for that? Why is Tom Brady? All Tom Brady did was fumble the ball, and when it was stripped by Charles Woodson and recovered by Greg Beekert, and then they said, nope, the rule is he didn't have it tucked away. I can't remember how to describe it anymore, but it's still the Patriots' ball, and then they kicked the field goal to win it. Why wouldn't it be the league and the competition committee hated for that? Why is the quarterback the one to suffer the hatred for a terrible, terrible call?
Because you admit it's a terrible call.
Oh God,
because
yes. The Raiders got totally hosed.
Up until now, Tom Brady has been the poster boy of the NFL in terms of NFL quarterbacks and how the game should be played. Now there was a lot of he's in contrast to the new style of quarterback that is trying to invade the NFL, which is the running, more athletic quarterback. Now,
Now,
not
rules
so much.
Now,
not
in order for in order no, in order for him to compete with that kind of athletic ability, they had to change rules. And so he's been very successful. Now, I'm going to tell you this. The Patriots were on the rise before he even was named the starter with Drew Bledsoe and the coach at the time before.
Well, Bill Belichick was still
Bill
the coach
Parcells.
when Bledsoe got hurt and Brady came in, it was still Belichick.
Belichick is the one
who made the decision that when Bledsoe went down and Brady came in to keep Brady as his
right.
guy.
Bill Belichick, exactly. Bill Belichick took over and Brady eras began. But Bill Parcells, his quarterback was Drew Bledsoe.
Correct.
And when
correct.
Drew Bledsoe went down, then the Brady era came.
Correct.
Now,
that's when Brady started.
Belichick.
But again, none of what you described. Let me tell you what I think. Then we'll get to the rest of the list because I know you had some other comments on that.
Okay.
Let me tell you what I think you're doing. I think you're making my point for me about jealousy. This is what people have for Tom Brady. They see he has been successful. Hold on. He has been the most successful. He has been the most successful quarterback.
Stavin,
I can't do radio like this, brother. I can't do radio
where we're talking over each other.
You've got to let me finish my point, okay?
Go ahead.
Tom Brady has been more successful than any quarterback of his era and tied with Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw with 4 Super Bowl wins as the most successful quarterback of all time. Having been to 6 Super Bowls, he is the most successful quarterback of all time in that regard. You take all of that. You take the fact that he looks like he belongs on the cover of GQ. He's married to a woman who has been on the cover of every female model magazine ever published. He's rich, he's good looking, and he's successful, and he's got every ring that there is. There are so many reasons people want to take Tom Brady down, and they hate him, but all of them are because they're not him. All of them are because of jealousy. Every rule change that was put in that you say was put in to favor Tom Brady also ended up favoring whom? Every other quarterback playing the game. And none of them took those rules changes and were as effective at winning with them as Tom Brady was. So all of the hatred for Tom Brady that would put him number 5 on the list is born of pure and utter jealousy. And I can tell you that honestly, because guess who felt that way? I did. For his entire career, I have hated the Patriots, I have hated Bill Belichick, and I have hated Tom Brady. But I didn't have any legitimate reason to. It's just because he was too doggone good, and he was too doggone successful, and the rest of us ought to have some of the same breaks that this cat got.
Well,
jealousy. That's it.
He's got life
by the you-know-what.
I don't believe.
All right. Who else on the list did you want to talk about? First of all,
with Belichick, the reason I dispelled that jealousy thing because I mentioned one of the quarterbacks I did not like, and that was Joe Montana.
Joe Montana was never hated. He was never
exactly
hated.
Because nobody made excuses or changed the game for him. Nobody.
You got to stop that. That's a canard, man. That's a false statement to say they changed the game for him. It's not like they gave Tom Brady one set of rules and then said, okay, that's for you, Tom, but you, Peyton Manning, and you, Roethlisberger, and you, Rivers, and you, going back and back to Favre, and everybody else he's played against in his career, you guys have to do it differently. Any rule that is done to favor the offense or the quarterback, it favors every offense and every quarterback. Just because he's better than everybody else does not make it unique to him.
I don't believe he's better than everybody else. And I'm going to tell you this. I am a Michigan fan. I follow his career since Michigan.
Okay.
I don't think he's better than everybody else.
Well, you know what,
so
man? Until you can explain how a guy can put up the numbers he has with the success that he's had, with the 6 bowls and the 4 titles that he has, and claim that that's not better than everybody else, until you can explain that, then we're just going to have to end that conversation and agree to disagree.
I agree.
It's impossible to say anything else.
But you don't agree with me.
You'd really have to write a book on how he's not better than everybody else, given all of those successes that I just outlined.
He's not. I just don't think he is.
All right, fair enough.
You don't have the athletic ability to be better than everybody else.
Who else is on that list?
Here's the thing.
Wait. What did you just say? Hold on. What did you just say about Athletic? What was the last thing you said about
Athletic? I said that because he doesn't have the athletic ability of everybody else.
Oh, my God. Brother, listen, Stevin, you mentioned Joe Montana. Joe Montana was about the most unathletic dude in the history of the sport. Joe Montana couldn't run. Joe Montana had a pop-gun arm. He did his thing with his brain and with accuracy and with the greatest receiver of all time. Joe Montana was no athlete.
Do you think Tom Brady could do what Joe Montana did with any of the guys that played in his era? You think he'd be as successful as he is now?
All I'm saying to you is when you said he wasn't athletic enough, and that's why
I'm saying
Joe Montana was no more athletic. Let me put it to you this way. In a 40-yard race between Joe Montana and Tom Brady, you know what? You know who would win? And Ndamukong Suh would win. Okay? Neither one of those cats could run. Neither one of them had high athleticism. But what they have is incredible, uncanny vision, wisdom, intelligence, decision-making ability in the pocket, and ability to pick up their teammates and lift them and drive them onto victories that they should not have gotten otherwise. Those are the things that made Tom Brady and Joe Montana both the two most successful quarterbacks in the history of the sport.
If Joe Montana played now, he has 6 rings, 7 yeah. rings. It'd be too easy for him.
But you know what? Hey, you know what's interesting about that? What does Tom Brady have? He's got 4, and he is 2 of the greatest catches in the history of the Super Bowl away from having 6 rings. It was the helmet catch. Hey, it was the helmet catch by Tyree, and then the Mario Manningham catch. It took 2 spectacular plays from Giants to stop Manning from having the 6 that you said Joe Montana would have. So I'm going to go ahead and rest my case right there. You got anybody else on that list you wanted to comment on?
Yeah, you had mentioned Isaiah Crowell. You had mentioned him being on the list, and I disagree with that because even though he made a distasteful
mildest word you could use. Reprehensible, despicable.
Here's the thing is that he made a bad decision on how he expressed himself about police. But you got to think, he has a personal experience with the police that wasn't negative. That was negative back when he was in Georgia.
Care.
He was the number one.
I don't
he
care.
Was the number
Are you
one.
Kidding me right now? Hold on a second, Stephen. Hold on a second. If you have a negative experience with a postman, do you promote then the killing of innocent postmen because you had a bad experience with one? This dude was putting out something there that showed his solidarity with cop killing. That's what he did. This commentary and
this
with the
guy.
Picture that says, I want to kill cops. And you're going to tell me that, well, he once had a bad experience with a police officer,
easy.
So therefore it clouded his judgment. Bull, that's reprehensible, Stevin. Come on. You're better than that.
Well, you know what? A lot of people make poor decisions and make poor comments based on smaller things than what he's been through. You know, this guy went to Georgia, was the number one running back at Georgia as a freshman, was kicked off the team because a gun was found in his car that he himself turned in to police. And because he turned it in, he was arrested, was thrown out of Georgia. He was trying to be on the side of righteousness and do something good, and he ended up getting arrested for it.
I'm going to say it again in case you didn't hear me out in the chief seat, Stephen.
I'm going to say it again in case you didn't hear it clearly enough
the first time.
You don't really care.
Because
it
doesn't apply to this situation.
Stop.
Listen. It doesn't matter because he wasn't responding to his situation. He wasn't making a comment about, you know what happened to me in Georgia? It was terrible. The justice system failed me, and I feel terrible. He was making a comment about killing cops And I don't care what your previous experience is, especially at a time. And I appreciate your call. I got to run and get to a timeout. And I'm getting, because I got to compose myself. Especially at a time when cops, innocent cops, who had nothing to do with anything anywhere, had just been slaughtered, five of them ambush style, in Dallas, Texas. He was siding with cop killing. Don't tell me about he once had a bad experience because he turned in a gun and they blamed him for it. And so therefore, that doesn't give you a right to side with cop killing. And to show young kids who are probably following your Instagram account like they do all of their heroes. You look at LeBron James. How many of LeBron James' 29 million Twitter followers or whatever he has, how many of them you think are adults? And how many of them you think are kids looking up to their hero? Athletes get followed by kids. And his message to kids and everybody else was that. Don't tell me that because he once had a bad experience with being blamed for a firearm that wasn't his, that it makes that okay. It does not make that okay. It is irrelevant to this conversation. I don't care about it. I don't think anybody else cares about it. And I doggone well, but better, would bet you your car that if you ask Isaiah Crowell when you posted that, were you thinking about your freshman year at Georgia? And I promise you he would tell you no. I promise you that. He was getting caught up in the same foolishness that far too many other people are getting caught up in this war on police officers. Let me get a timeout. I'll be back.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Wrapping it up here on The Ticket this afternoon. Drive time still coming your way, however. Mr. Cushlin in one more time for Mr. Miller.
Yeah, yes, one more time. Mike back in the big chair coming up on Monday.
All right, very good. So as camps get going in college and professional football, Miller comes back and gets you ready for all that on Monday. So Jim Cushlin will take you through your Friday. Just to get back to the rest of the list, because I didn't give you the whole thing, and if you're wondering... I think it would be only fair to let you know every other name that is on this. So the 40 most hated players in the National Football League, I'm sorry, in the history of the National Football League, a good number of which are active players currently, according to the Sporting News, which compiled this very interesting list, include the following, in reverse order, from 40 to 31, the most hated players are Eli Manning, Marshawn Lynch, and I think that probably wouldn't have been until, you know, the Super Bowl 2 years ago when he did his whole I'm not talking to anybody and I'm only here so I don't get fined thing. A lot of people didn't like that. Rob Gronkowski, Rodney Harrison. Rodney Harrison was a great, 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 great player for many, many years, but he was considered to be a headhunter by a lot of his colleagues in the National Football League. Number 36, Odell Beckham Jr., guaranteed not just the cockiness, but because of the headhunting he did on Josh Norman last season. Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence, you know, it's weird because, Jim, they said they were excluding people like O.J. Simpson and the tight end, Aaron Hernandez,
right.
Because, you know, people who committed crimes after the fact, they were only using people who are on their, what's that?
Yeah, no, go ahead, keep going.
Only the people who were on the list, or excuse me, who were hated while they were on the field, I beg your pardon.
Right.
Lawrence Taylor, I don't know that he was hated so much when he was on the field. He was feared when he was on the field, but most of the stuff that made him despised was off the field. You know, cocaine, tons of cocaine allegations and admissions after the fact, problems with prostitutes and young prostitutes and other things that he has been accused of and admitted to through the years. I don't know that he was really hated beyond, for anything while he was actually on the field. Nobody even blamed him for snapping Joe Theismann's leg. It wasn't his fault.
Right.
I mean, it was just the way it went. So.
What's interesting is you throw that out, because I was thinking the same thing when I was jotting this down and looking at it, and I saw Lawrence Taylor here at number 35, and I'm thinking, okay, I mean, most of those things weren't really released until afterwards.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of this other thing. Since this list is very heavy on active players, with Lawrence Taylor on that list...
Not very heavy. I mean, there's 40 names, and I think probably 15 or so are active, so it's more heavy on the retired players, just to clarify that.
It's 18. If you're counting Manziel and Greg Hardy, it's 18.
Okay, and they're not on current rosters.
Right.
Okay, fair enough. So it's heavy. I guess it's heavy, but it's not a majority. But anyway, go ahead.
The point is, I'm thinking about what you're saying about Taylor, and it makes me think, with it a little heavier, I should say, on current players. Mm-hmm. You mean to tell me back in the 70s you didn't hate members of that Steeler team if you weren't a Steeler fan? I mean, they called him Mean Joe for a reason. You're telling me if you weren't a Raiders fan, you didn't dislike some? That's what I'm noticing that's absent on this. Some of those 70s Raiders defenders, some of those Steel Curtain defenders, well, some of the purple people eaters.
There's one of those 70s Raiders defenders on it, and that's number 26, Jack Taylor. Let me run through the rest of them
so
we can respond to that before we get out of here. And I know we only have a couple of minutes left, but it is what it is. Number 34 was Jim McMahon, the punky QB. Richard Sherman, which we discussed, number 33. I don't think he belongs on the list at all. 32 is Ricky Williams. Ricky Williams, and I think that was basically because of the weed thing. Remember, Ricky Williams retired from the NFL because he said, and I think the quote was, I like smoking weed more than I like playing football.
It was, if that wasn't it, it was darn close to that.
Yeah, and the people are like, are you kidding me? Multi-millions of dollars at your, you know, at your fingertips, and you'd rather get high. Just one of those things. He wasn't a bad guy, by the way. It was just that. Keyshawn Johnson. Keyshawn Johnson was one of the cockiest guys ever. I could see why a lot of people did not like him. Mark Gastineau brought about the sack dance and the sack dance revolution, and he was just considered cocky as a you-know-what, and people hated him. I get that. Brian Cox, who flipped off fans on his way into buildings. Vontaze Burfict, we discussed in the last hour. Hines Ward was hated by anybody outside of Pittsburgh because he beat you and he beat you up with a big smile on his face.
Right.
And people hated that. I mean, he scored 100-plus touchdowns, and then he had some of the most crushing blocks ever, and he did it while smiling, and it just drove people nuts. Jack Tatum paralyzed Daryl Stingley with a questionable hit in 1977 and was widely regarded as one of the biggest headhunters in the history of the game. Cortland Finnegan, just a straight-up punk who would rather punch you than cover you. 24, Chuck Cecil. 23, Chad Johnson, a.k.a. Ocho Cinco. Anybody who changes his name to reflect his jersey number and does the Hall of Fame jacket thing is going to be just over-the-top cockiness made people hate him. 22, Brett Favre. I have to admit, he's on my list. I was never a big Brett Favre fan. I thought he was overrated at times. I thought he was far too cocky. I thought he was there was just something that rubbed me the wrong way about good old boy Brett Favre. Number on the list at number 22. Number 21, Tim Tebow. For this, I also don't understand. Tim Tebow, what did he do that made people hate him? He believed in God. And he told people about it when he would do interviews. He'd say, I just give glory to God to thank him for getting me here and the ability to play this game, blah, blah, blah.
Maybe I can help explain it to you, Bob, because I could care less about the religion thing. I really, really
but
could.
That's the only thing the only thing people criticized him over.
Well, I was thinking along the lines of everyone's trying to make him think he's this new great quarterback. He was not a good quarterback, period, end of story.
But a lot of guys were not good quarterbacks who don't.